Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. I want to start today by saying a big thanks to the gang of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners who joined Judith and me and folks from the DNR and from the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. Yesterday, we had a great birding trip. We went from Frouchy Point in Madison to Picnic Point, and we must have seen at least 50 species of birds, including, I think, one of the highlights, probably a barred owl. But I really enjoyed the chance to talk to many Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. It was a lot of fun, and I hope we'll have a chance to do it. Again, we did a little walking around. Maybe you were in the garden. Did you do a little gardening over the weekend? If temperatures weren't exactly summery in all parts of the state, but for a lot of people, it was fun. I know Judith got out and dug in the dirt on Sunday. And she may be, I don't know if she's feeling any, she's working on her fingers a little bit. She's got some sore hands. Maybe she'll call in today. That voice was Bill Boisenall, by the way. Lori Tide Brody chuckling there, too. They are both physical therapists. Great to have them with us today to talk about enjoying gardening and other spring activities and trying to avoid injury. Lori's a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, always a pleasure, of course.
It's good to be here. Unfortunately, I didn't get in my garden because I was at soccer this weekend. So you were watching. I have that sore butt syndrome from sitting in the car and sitting on a bleacher.
Yeah. It was windy.
It was chilly, really windy. Yeah. Windy and chilly. And hail and rain and then the sun came out, and then it rained again, and then the sun came out. It was a strange weekend.
Bill Boisenault, our guest as well. He's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and senior physical therapist as well. Were you outside, or did you get?
I was inside most of the weekend. I had no soccer. We live in a condo, so there's no gardening anymore either. So I had a pretty sheltered weekend.
Well, I tell you what, I was outside yesterday, which was a lot of fun. And then when I sort of spent the rest of Mother's Day with Renee and Emily, we were outside a bit of the time. Inside on Saturday because Emily plays basketball and her team kept winning in a tournament.
It's like, shouldn't basketball be over? Isn't it time for another sport?
So yeah, that was kind of an all day. That was kind of an all day event. The old sore butt syndrome.
Bleachers or whatever they have for you to sit on.
Right, they're not meant for people's behinds. No one's ever looked at the shape, perhaps. And for people who have sore hips or sore backs, sitting on those hard bleachers can be difficult. I see the typically see the top row as a premium where you can lean against the back wall, and that usually fills up early. But there are a number of things available that you can fit on a bleacher seat to provide some back support. And even if you don't have those little chairs, there's a thing called a not a chair that has little loops that go around your knees, and then they attach to a back support. So you can take that anywhere, even if you have one of those seats that doesn't fit on a bleacher. So there are some options out there.
Yeah, there's lots of different types of stadium chairs, and then the not a chair. The nice thing about that is it folds up. It weighs about a pound and a half, maybe, and you can fold it up into a little container. So there are options out there for people who have difficulty sitting who want to watch their kids involved in sports.
Well, what about when we're on our hands and knees in the garden? you think about it. Especially if you have arthritis, but even if you don't, it's pretty easy to get stiff and sore.
Yeah, there are a number of issues. I mean, there's the kneeling on your knees where people can't kneel on their knees, and obviously there are some cushions for that. There are the knee pads, which are very nice because you don't have to move them every time you move in the garden. They stay with you. Being on your hands and knees takes some of the pressure off your back because it's distributed on your hands and knees. But if you have arthritis in your wrist and hands, then it's a problem. So for those people who have arthritis everywhere, changing positions frequently, having options of a low chair or something to kneel on or a variety of positions.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the key. If this is a new activity for us and that spring, springtime is finally here. Yeah, if you do any single activity long enough that you haven't done for months, you're going to feel it. And so it's kind of the principle that we've always propose in terms of cross-training with physical activity, you can cross-train with gardening activities. You know, you can weed for a while, you can plant for a while, you can mow for a while, then you can come back and weed some more. You know, if you do any one of those long enough for the first time or second time, you're going to feel it. And most people recover within a day or two, and it's not that big of a deal.
And at some point, you have to get cognitive about it. That is, you have to think about it. And, you know, you weed, and, you know, each little weed doesn't seem so bad, but cumulatively, if you're standing and bending over, you're really going to feel it, even though each single weed doesn't seem that much. And then you get to that really stubborn one, and you say, I just have to pull a little bit harder. And next thing you know, you get that sharp pain in your back, you get that pain down your leg. It only takes that split second. And at that point where you say, I just have to pull a little harder, you have to say, stop.
No.
Right.
I'm not going to do this.
Right. Really watch your posture, your position before you yank on, or get a different tool that allows you to get a little deeper maybe as well.
Right. And I'm guilty of that myself. I remember standing in my sister's backyard helping her clear out some woods, and I was in an awkward position, one that put my SI joint at risk, and I was trying to pull this root out, and I thought, I just have to pull a little bit harder, and I felt my SI joint crunch, and I thought, darn it, you should know better. So even when we know better, we got to stop and think.
Well, we have Kyle in Eau Claire with a question for you, so let's go to Kyle. Let's see. Kyle, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great. Great to have you with us. What's on your mind today?
I have to have my wrist fused, and I was wondering what's going to be the follow-up for physical therapy. They're going to do a four-corner fusion on it. I broke the carpal bones and dislocated them back in 94.
Okay.
1994.
Okay.
Is this your dominant hand?
No, it's not.
Oh, well, that's good news. And do you use your hands and wrist for a living?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of work do you do?
I'm insurance, so I'm on the computer all the time.
Computer, okay.
Running quotes and stuff like that. I've changed positions. I used to do construction, so.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, the first thing would be to talk to the surgeon and see what their restrictions are. But usually a fusion is pretty straightforward, and it is what it is. Instead of having movement between your carpal bones and the rows of carpal bones, they fuse it so it doesn't move. And so, you know, if you had fractures and dislocations, you probably have instability. That instability leads to painful arthritis. So you get to a certain point, then your best option is to fuse it so it stops moving. And then what you need to watch for is that you can accommodate and get the movement that you need to have at your wrist and hand at adjacent joints. And typically they would send you to physical therapy or sometimes occupational therapy in this case to help ensure that you can appropriately get the motion that you need at your adjacent joint so you can continue to function in ways that you need to function.
Yeah,
Kyle, immediately post-op, there won't be much in terms of rehabilitation. They want that fusion to become solid, and so your post-op program really will be immobilization for X period of time, and that's where your surgeon come into play. You know, once you get the okay to start using that arm, then that's where certified hand specialist will be someone to work with for the things that Lori described. But you'll be, you know, you won't be doing much with that arm for a while.
You may be doing some maintenance things for your shoulder to keep your shoulder strong and mobile so that you don't develop a secondary complication there.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you today as we visit with our two guests, Bill Boisenhall and Lori Tyne Brody, talking with them about dealing with all those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Now, let's go back to gardening for a minute. You mentioned tools, and there are some tools out there now and companies that do. I know Fiskars, for one. I usually don't mention companies, but I know Fiskars I have some of their tools that really are great for
Yeah, things that are ergonomically designed to reduce the stress on your wrist and hand so that you don't have to squeeze as hard to cut or snip or whatever, and that have a grip that matches the natural form of your hand instead of it just being a plain cylinder, which doesn't really match the normal contours of your hand. They'll have grips that match the contour better so you can have a more efficient and powerful grip without having to squeeze quite so hard.
I can remember gardening, this is some years back, where I was doing a lot of clipping, and I didn't have, I had a tool that was for it, but not ergonomically correct.
Right.
Man, was my wrist sore the next day after.
And your elbow often, it'll give you tennis elbow from that repetitive gripping.
Well, along the same lines of the equipment is good footwear. So one, you don't slip and lose your balance as you're yanking or pushing and pulling things. And then gloves, a good pair of gloves in terms of blisters. You know, we usually talk muscle and joint issues, but blisters are a big deal in the beginning as well. So, you know, good hand wear is also important.
Yeah, my wife has always got the gloves on, and I've, for whatever reason, can't find my gloves. And I'm out there, and I, you know, pretty soon I've got cuts and punctures
slivers
from the
and,
slivers, and I'm like, why? Then I go and get my gloves.
Yeah, exactly. But having the right tool for the right activity also makes sense. And you know, if you have a shovel close by, then when you're pulling that weed that's a little bit reluctant to come out, I think you're more likely to pick up the shovel and try to dig it out than, you know, for me, I'd just be so lazy. I'd say, oh, gosh, I don't want to go get the shovel. I'm just going to pull on this one more time and see if I can't get it. But if you have all the tools there, I think you're more likely to use them.
You know, I used, and this is going back to winter, I got a pickaxe.
Oh.
And I had never had one.
Every
and
guy's dream, huh?
Oh, and man, we get these big clumps of ice and snow.
Yeah.
I could just go out and break those up.
Yeah.
I even went across to help the neighbor, you know, who had this enormous, she had this enormous.
Like a glacier
out there. And a minute or two, I had this broken up. And
We actually have one of those, too, because we have a creek and we have miniature donkeys. And so in the winter, we have to go down and break the ice on the creek so that they can
the donkeys
have water. So, it's a pretty valuable tool.
Green Bay caller, Jan, let's turn to you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to see if maybe you can help me with a problem I'm having. I do a lot of running, and my right knee has been swelling up, and there's been pain on the inside for about a month and a half or so. It started right around Easter. I went out, I did a 9-mile run, and then I didn't do any stretching the next day, and I did another 9-mile run. And I kept icing it and stuff, and I did some other exercises. I did some bike riding and all that, tried to run a little bit less, and I thought I pretty much had it down. Saturday, I got up and I was going to go for a run. And everything, I went, well, I finally got this under control. And I went out for like an hour, and I came back, and after the run was pretty good. But then as the day went on, it's like it all came back again and stuff. So I just don't know what it's like on the inside of the right knee, and the knee swells up too. The weird thing about it is when it happened in the first place, the next day I put a lot of miles on at work, and I thought I put a knee brace on it, one of those elastic ones with the hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it on. I thought, well, that would help a little bit. But every once in a while, I would just get this excruciating pain, like something shifted on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I just, like, took it off, and it was actually better without it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure exactly what I'm doing. I thought I almost had it under control, but now it seems to have flared back again.
So what kind of work do you do, may I ask?
I'm a fancy word, material expediter. I move heavy rolls and stuff. So I'm moving back and forth. I put a lot of miles, a lot of lifting, picking up stuff, moving heavier stuff.
Okay, and you're on cement?
Yeah, I'm on cement all day.
Okay, and so when this happened, the swelling was on the inside. Can you see the swelling, or do you just feel the swelling?
No, I can see the swelling.
Okay. Well, you probably need to go in and have this looked at because it's been that long and it's not better. You know, probably the number one thing that causes your knee to swell and that kind of pattern is a little meniscus tear.
Okay.
So given that you're on cement all day, you could have some wear and tear, tearing of your meniscus or the cartilage between your two bones. And then when you go out and pound on it, that makes it even worse. The bicycling is probably pretty good because you don't have the weight bearing or the compression of your meniscus with that. But when you go out and you're weight bearing on it, it gets it stirred up. So I would go in and have this looked at, because it was going to get better on its own. Sounds like you did the right things to get it better, and boom, you went back to your weight-bearing, running activity, impact, and you're right back to square one. So it's time to have someone else take a look at it.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't quit totally running. I mean, I'd done a couple half marathons in between and stuff.
Jeez.
Actually, I got another one coming up this weekend.
All right.
But I mean, I had cut back, and the bicycling didn't seem to bother it at all,
right.
And stuff like that. And it was seeming to get better and stuff.
Yeah. That's because you were taking good care of it. But you know, if running is going to be part of your lifestyle, get in and get this looked at, because you know, if it is a meniscus tear, the more you beat on it like this, and the more inflammation you create in your knee, just the more sensitive and irritable your knee is going to continue to be down the road. And it can also cause more abrasion and wear and tear in your joint surfaces. That's really pretty irreparable.
Yeah. And Jan, especially with it's not just your running, but your work, the
right.
physical demands of your work. You need two good knees to do what you're doing safely.
Yeah.
And so it's the running. I understand where the running is important, but it's work related too, in terms of why I think it's important to get this checked out.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two physical therapist friends, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tynebrody. Great to have them along. Call with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Talking about all kinds of physical therapy issues. We zeroed in a little bit on gardening, but taking other questions as well. Scott and Madison up next with a question. Scott, hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for having this topic.
Sure.
I already feel smarter. I knew she was going to say meniscus. Now, here's my question. For the last 3 years, I kind of changed occupations. So I don't do the physical labor that I used to do. So I kind of let myself go a little bit.
Okay.
So I want to get back into shape. And my motto has always been, people go, do you work out? I tell them, no. I got that urge one time. I took a nap and it passed. So now I'm willing to work out, but how do I go about it slowly so I don't wind up crippling myself, you know, in extreme pain? I just want to lose a little bit of weight and exercise some.
Oh, what a great question. What a good time of year to get started when we're motivated, and then hopefully that will carry you through the winter. Well, you know, I always tell people is the first thing is you have to figure out what you like to do, because nobody's going to sustain an exercise program if they hate what they're doing. So you have to decide if you like to be outdoors, you know, walking or bicycling in the fresh air, or if you like to be indoors in a gym or some combination of those two activities. Kind of have to decide if you're someone who likes to exercise alone and this is my time for my space and I'm going to go do what I want to do, or if you do better if you socialize, if you walk or jog or bike with somebody. So those to me are sort of the big overarching questions you kind of have to answer for yourself, and then you can go any one of those ways. One of the benefits of a gym is that there's staff there that can help you design a program that fits your needs, hopefully, if that person is listening to you and hears your preferences and goals and so on. And then you just work your way into it easily, and you'll see after a while that you will gravitate toward the things that you like to do. And if you just listen to that and follow that, then you should be in good shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all that. The challenge is getting into a routine. And that's what Laurie's talking about in the beginning. Once you get in a routine, it's much better to follow through. But doing things you enjoy, obviously, is a big part of that. And in the social aspect, it doesn't work for everybody. But if you do things in groups or you have a partner or two that exercise with, and on days you don't feel like doing it, hopefully they do, and then you're out there exercising when by yourself you might not have pursued it. And so doing group stuff or teaming up with somebody can be very helpful. Another thing, Scott, I mean, you haven't mentioned anything, but you know, if you have any pre-existing health issues, you know, blood pressure issues or heart problems or diabetes, then if you haven't had a physical for a while, go get a physical and then ask for some parameters from your physician before you start exercising. If you have a number of orthopedic issues going on, then sometimes seeing a physical therapist for a visit or two so they can help you design your program that's safe for your arthritic knee or your back. But, you know, if you're good from a health standpoint, then you don't need to do that. But otherwise, that's a good general rule to follow.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. So ease into it. And good luck. Joyce and Nina, hello.
Hi. About 2 months ago, I was diagnosed with a partial tear fraying of my posterior tibia tendon in my right foot. I had an MRI. That's how it was discovered. And so my orthopedic doctor prescribed a UCB orthotic, and I've been wearing that for about a month. I have an appointment scheduled with him in another couple weeks because he wants me to wear it a good amount of time before I see him again, because he doesn't really want to do surgery. But I'll tell you, it doesn't seem like it's getting much better, and it's really been hard because I can't even hardly walk for enjoyment without pain in that tendon, even when I'm wearing my orthotics. And I guess I was just wondering what you know about that injury, and is it something that it does just take a long time to heal?
Do you know how you sustained the injury?
Well, I think it was just a progression.
It's a progression.
I was really active. Yes, I was a runner, and then I also did a lot of elliptical type, that kind of, you know, biking, all that. So now I don't do any of that. I do swimming. And
okay.
I still just have I've really ratcheted my exercise routine back. And yet, it almost seems like it's getting worse. And these orthotics are extremely rigid, so I know I've got to break that, you know, my step into that. But it's still just, I'm just kind of starting to feel like, is it ever going to get better? Or, I don't know. The surgical, I guess, option isn't something he wants to do. Now, I don't know. Maybe that'll change.
But. Have you been to physical therapy at all for this?
Well, not yet. Just the orthopedic surgeon and the orthotics guy.
Okay. Because the question that comes to mind for me is, if you're running and doing elliptical, why are you having symptoms on one side? Why are you having fraying on one side? I mean, theoretically, your mm-hmm. collagen and connective tissue are the same throughout your body. And if you're running, et cetera, it's pretty similar. You know, one exception would be if you spent lots of years running on a banked road. But, you know, that aside, it should be similar side to side. So, you know, I guess I would encourage you to see a physical therapist who can do a good stem to stern examination of you. There could be a leg length difference, that's contributing to that problem. You could
have flat feet. I have flat feet.
Right. Right.
Yes. Okay.
But again, you're having problems only on one side. So someone needs to sort of dissect that out and see why that is. Is there a way, is it the way you move? Is it the way your hips are rotated? Is it the way your pelvis sits? And is there anything we can do to change that? And then, you know, there's also some specific strengthening exercises. They can look at the mobility in your foot to see if that's a contributing factor. There's just a number of things that person could look at. Could also give you advice about an exercise program and help you with that. So you're in a rigid orthotic now. You know, for some people, a rigid orthotic is really painful, and they do better in a softer orthotic, especially if you are already flat-footed. There are a number of different theories, actually two major camps of theories on orthotics for people with flat feet. There are those who say it should be corrected, and there are those who say that's your normal stance position, and correcting it causes yet a different set of problems. So, so you know, you're being treated under one philosophy, but there are other coexisting philosophies that that someone could entertain in regard to your care. So,
okay.
All right. Good luck.
So, yeah, I'd start with a referral to PT and see somebody who specializes in foot and ankle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jean in Madison. Hello.
Hi. Long-time gardener. And my question for you is, what do you do post-gardening session so you don't freeze up for a day or two?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been talking about prevention, but what happens if the pain is there, then what do you do? Gene, it's a great question. You know, generally over for things like overuse activities where you could have stirred up something in a muscle or a tendon, probably ice is better, an ice pack. And if you have if you don't have an ice pack in your freezer, if you have frozen vegetables, you can use a bag of those and put them inside a damp pillowcase and put it over the area.
Well,
and probably
a hot shower is not a good idea then.
Well, a hot shower is not necessarily a bad thing, but locally, you know, ice is probably better immediately after an activity like this. You know, within as general 24 to 48 hours, you can start mixing heat and ice. But for a real local area that's stiff and sore, ice is probably going to give you more relief early on than the heat is going to.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. An email from Ron says, I started running outdoors this spring. May have increased the miles too quickly. My left foot hurts after running, and the pain remains for a couple of days, 1 to 2 days. Seems to be around the top and outer side of the foot, not under the foot or muscle related. I'm taking ibuprofen, wondering if heat or cold is better for pain relief. Tried stopping running for a week, but it came right back when I started up again.
Yeah, Bill and I considered this question, and we both feel like you probably need to go in and have this looked at, mostly because of where your pain is. The outside of the foot around that long bone of your little toe is prone to a stress fracture. You know, there's not a lot else that happens out there. You could have, you know, some connective tissue soreness or a little bit of muscle or tendon soreness, but it's not going to just come right back after a week of rest like that. So the first thing is to get cleared from a stress fracture perspective. And then thereafter, I would, if that gets cleared, I'd go to physical therapy and have them take a look at your gait and how you walk and move and see if they can figure out why that happened. Again, it's the same issue as Joyce, where if you're running, why are you having symptoms on one side? So we need someone to take a look at how you move to figure that out.
And on to Mary in Brown Deer. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
On Friday, I was working out, doing skater lunges side to side, and something snapped in my right knee. And now my kneecap keeps popping in and out of place, and I'm wondering, will this dissolve itself, or is this something that needs to be seen?
Ouch.
Well, the side-to-side motion causes side-to-side instability of your kneecap. It sounds like you subluxed your kneecap. If you dislocate your kneecap, you know it, because it sits to the outside of, instead of in front of your knee, it sits on the outside. But it probably slipped out. So this can be treated conservatively, and I would go in and see a physical therapist to have them evaluate how you move, take a look at your kneecap. They may want to assess how your kneecap sits in the groove. They'll look at the soft tissues around there to see if there's any specific stretching that you need to do, and then usually some specific strengthening, mostly around your glutes and so on. And probably the side-to-side stuff is going to have to stop.
Mm.
And will it resolve itself at some point?
It should, depending upon how much, how many risk factors you have that predispose you to patellar instability. I mean, the good news is apparently you've never had this before and all the time you've been doing this. But once it's subluxed, it's kind of like making that rut in the road. It makes it a little easier for it to come out again. And I can't tell you how easy it is for it to come out again without looking at your anatomy.
Mm. Yeah, Mary, the other thing that's good, Mary, is this only happened a couple of days ago. You know, so the prognosis is better compared to this happened 3 months ago, and it was still slipping in and out of place. So the time frame also bodes well for you.
Very good.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mary, for calling. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our UW physical therapist, with us today. Larry Mueller here. And on to Gail in Oregon. Hi, Gail.
Hello. About 4 years ago, I had my right knee replaced, and my left knee needs to be replaced. I saw my orthopedic surgeon, but I started doing cortisone shots last July, and they bring instant tremendous relief for about 3 months. And I've been trying to find out, I've heard that too much cortisone is not good. It has side effects. And I'm just trying to find out and get another opinion on how much cortisone can I take. I'd like to keep putting this off for a little bit. So that's my question.
Okay, all righty. Bill, what do you think?
Well, it's a good question, Gail. And there are potential side effects and adverse effects with cortisone injections. It can lead to tendon breakdown. It impacts bone. You know, the general rule that I've seen clinically is no more than 3 within a 6 to 12-month time frame. And anything more than that, then you have increased risk of having some of the significant effects that the cortisone can have on the body. So with injections, it's more the local impact as opposed to systemic. If you're taking steroids orally, for example, but it can cause breakdown of connective tissue if you get too many. So that's the general range that I have seen clinically over the years.
Have you had the other kinds of injections, the Synvisc? Is your knee too far gone for those?
I had that, and it didn't work at all. It caused a lot of swelling, and it was very painful.
Okay.
So my surgeon said, well, just go back to cortisone.
Okay.
I mean, I'll probably have this done within the year. I just haven't figured out when.
Okay.
And he didn't seem to have a problem with that. But I thought, well, I don't want to be doing any other damage to my body, you know.
Right.
With,
yeah.
You know, cortisone.
No, I think like Bill said, if it's within a year, you know, you're good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Patty in Oregon, on to you now. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was recently diagnosed with having tendonitis in my ankle bone, and by recently, I mean, I believe it was just last Friday, and I have done nothing to it other than 4 years ago, I sprained that particular ankle and then broke the bones, the top bones in both of my feet, so I don't know if this is a residual thing from that, but it is so painful, and I'm wondering if you guys have some good advice as to what I can do. Not doing anything feels worse than doing something.
Patty, which tendon is it? On the inside, the outside, the back?
It's on the outside, and it feels like it's directly on that ankle bone.
Oh, it goes going around the outside on the back of the ankle bone? Okay, yeah, so it'd be the peroneal tendons. And, you know, if you, depending upon what bone you fractured, or if you... sprain that, you could have subluxed those tendons and gotten them stirred up. Have you been to physical therapy at all?
No, this just started happening last week, and she just suggested doing a few exercises and icing it, the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd go in and I'd ask for a referral to physical therapy and have them take a look at it. If you have had a fracture there, if you've had a sprain there, you know, how you move can be perpetuating the symptoms. And that's one of the important factors when you talk about things like ankles, knees, hips, where you're walking and using them all day. So if you have an abnormality in your gait pattern that, you know, you're not even aware of because you've been moving like that for so long, then even if you treat that tendonitis locally and kind of get it under control, when you go start walking again, it tends to come back. So one of the things we like to do is get at the underlying cause of that problem and then treat the tendonitis simultaneously.
Okay, so, that sounds great. I will see if I can. I'm assuming the doctor would have no issue with that.
Probably not.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Jean and Racine. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling on behalf of my 94-and-a-half-year-old mother.
Wow.
And she's still living on her own. She's doing really well, except And her right shoulder, all of a sudden, she said it's like overnight, she couldn't raise her arm. And if she tries to raise it, like her hand up in front of her, it gets maybe a few inches and it starts to shake. And she's not a doctor-going person, so I finally convinced her to go to the orthopedist. And he said that her rotator cuff is pretty much gone. And the only thing he could do would be surgery that he didn't think her bones could take and she wouldn't want anyway. Because 7 years ago she fell and she had a shoulder, her left shoulder, replaced. And that's part of the problem with the physical therapy. She went through a lot of physical therapy with the replaced shoulder, and it's never been good. She can use her biceps. She can pull her hand up to her shoulder, but she can't raise that arm either.
No.
So now, because she can't raise either of them, she's really stuck. Yes. And I was just wondering, her GP suggested physical therapy, and then he said, well, and if that doesn't help, then you have to go back to the orthopedist.
Yeah.
I was wondering if physical therapy is something that would actually help her at all or not, maybe.
Oh, I think it would help her a great deal. You know,
really?
It's, well, you know, you didn't just wake up with a rotator cuff tear. It was something that's
right.
been going on and progressively getting worse. And so, you know, in terms of the change in the, you know, anatomy and pathology of her shoulder, you know, it probably didn't change overnight. What probably happened was she slept on it funny and inflamed the bursa and so on around there and just made it really sore. So I think some physical therapy to try to calm the shoulder down and do some gentle range of motion to help maintain the motion in her shoulder so she doesn't end up with a frozen shoulder to boot.
Her GP called it. He called it a frozen shoulder.
Have you tried to move her arm? Can you move it?
I'm afraid to.
Okay.
She's 94. I don't break anything.
Yeah.
The orthopedist tried to move it, and he could get it up a little higher, but not much.
Oh, okay. Well,
no.
She may be frozen already.
Yeah,
I mean, she needs to go in and have an assessment to see. Otherwise, she's going to be very limited. I mean, she may have difficulty staying in her home. So if that's the carrot that you need to hang out there to get her moving, then that may be it if she has two non-functional arms.
Yeah. Gene, when they diagnosed her with rotator cuff, did they do any imaging, like an MRI or a...
No.
Okay,
no.
All right.
She's just so... doesn't want all the tests and what, and she's very, very small and thin.
Yeah.
So, the doctor, the orthopedist said that her bone is actually pushing, her shoulder bone is pushing forward.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I understand the concern about tests and not wanting surgery. You know, one of the things I think the therapist can help with is a frozen shoulder has a different history, natural history, than a complete rotator cuff tear does. And if it truly is frozen shoulder, you know, it can take months, up to 12 to 18 months, but usually it resolves. Where if it's a complete rotator cuff tear, that's not going to come back.
Right.
And so the therapist may help sort out, all right, so why is the shoulder in so much pain and why is it so limited? And like Lori said, it could just be an inflamed bursa, and that shuts muscles off. They don't function as well. So the PT should be able to help from a diagnostic perspective, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a very good idea.
Yep.
I'm trying to convince her to go, but she doesn't drive. And we all live kind of a distance away, so she doesn't want to inconvenience anybody. It's just kind of
a
whole thing.
Oh, dear.
Well, especially if she didn't have great results from the rehab on her left shoulder, I can understand that, too. But maybe kind of push that. They can help try to get to the bottom of this and develop a good plan for her.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Gene, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, UW Physical Therapists, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Maybe those issues relate to spring gardening. Maybe they relate to other activities that you're involved with outside. But I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Relating to gardening, you know, great suggestion from listener Rick, who says when you're trying to pull out those really stubborn weeds, use a pair of pliers. Mm-hmm. Gives you a lot more leverage and saves your hands.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad idea.
And you potentially use both hands if it's a big enough root.
That's right. That's right. Excellent.
I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of gardening, reminds me that Judith and I on Friday will be broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, to ring in the Bayfield in Bloom events that are taking place all through the month of May and June, and I think even in through the summer. There's lots of fun things going on. We'll be at the Bayfield Pavilion, so I hope if you're up in that area of the state, I mean, right on Lake Superior, I hope you'll come in and say hello. It's a free thing, of course. And there's always lots of people there, and there are many booths of all kinds of things. You can buy plants and books, and the DNR will be there with a nice exhibit. Lots of good exhibits and some food as well. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's this Friday, 11 o'clock. Come early, because we'll be there early, and I like to visit with people, so I like to jabber.
No, not Larry.
We'll do a little of that beforehand, so come early. Stay late, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Bayfield Pavilion, Bayfield, Wisconsin, on Friday. John in the town of Dunn, up next. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have a question. Is sheet, after 3 weeks or so of suffering with a ruptured disc, is it? Can you treat it with wet heat or just heat? Will that help the pain? And will it eventually cure itself, do you think?
Will it cure itself? Will the ruptured disc cure itself? Over time, I mean, the disc, outer part of the disc is a ligament, just like our ACL at the knee and ligaments at other joints, and it can heal over time. The question is, what's the status of your nervous system? Are you having, pain in, into the leg or arm, or numbness, tingling, or weakness? Is it your low back or your neck? I'm sorry.
The low back, and pain is down one leg.
All right, and if it goes, does it go below the knee?
Not really.
Okay, so that's better from a prognosis standpoint. But the further down the leg the symptoms go, and especially if numbness and tingling, then less likely time by itself is going to heal it. Now, in terms of heat, after 3 weeks, it will get some muscles to relax, especially if you're in a good position for your back. But the heat's not going to cure anything. The disc is too deep. So would ice be better than heat? Well, ice is not going to cure it either. With the ice, if it's the more acute it is, the more locally painful, or if it's sharp pain, then ice is usually better than heat. But usually at 3 weeks out, you can even use both. And that'll help relax the muscles a little bit. But, John, if you're not getting any better after 3 weeks, I think it'd be good to see a physical therapist, have them examine you. There are exercises and programs designed to get pain up out of the leg. That has to happen first before the back gets better. And once the pain is up out of the leg, then the rehabilitation switches or changes, and they can help teach you how to do lots of those things on your own.
Very good.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thanks, John. Thanks a lot for calling. And Michelle in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about my 11-year-old daughter, who is a figure skater of about 4 years. And she's at the point of doing lots of working on jumping. And she does periodically take a pretty nasty spill on her tailbone.
Oh.
Yeah, and we have the things that we've been doing to try to sort of be aware and prevent injuries. She does work with a personal trainer who's used to working with figure skaters. So she's done a lot to make sure she's got good balance, moves well. I mean, she's a really strong kind of kid. And she wears pads when she's practicing her jumps to try to provide some absorption of the shock. But, last night was an example. She came home and even sneezing or laughing hurt because she took a good bump on her tailbone. So I have two questions, which is, one, when she has a fall like that, we're trying to do a good job preventing injuries, but when she has a fall like that, what's the best thing to do? We have that family discussion, ice or heat or nothing. And two, what might we want to watch for in terms of potential long-term consequences that we want keep an eye out when things are starting to not look good?
All great questions, and any parent would be having. You know, in terms of long term, the big thing would be is how persistent is the pain. If she falls and has pain, and the pain goes away within a couple of days, or you know, 3, 4, 5 days, and she's back doing all activity, there's probably going to be minimal long term effects from that particular fall. But if she has persistent symptoms in the pelvic area, around the tailbone, or up in the pelvis or the lumbar area, and it's not resolving completely over a matter of even a few weeks, then there's potential for longer term ramifications, because she's going to be compensating. She's going to move differently, skate differently, and that can set her up for problems developing over time. You know, the big concern with a fall in the tailbone is, you know, could there be a fracture? If there's not a fracture, there can be issues with the sacroiliac joints, the hip joints, or low lumbar spine, where, you know, muscles or disc can get injured. But I think the big part of it is, how quickly does she bounce back from the fall? Do the symptoms resolve? And if they don't resolve, she's left with some lingering effects, then that's where seeing a physical therapist would be good, to help completely recover from that incident, and also see if there's anything else that could be added or modified in her training program to help prevent. In terms of ice versus heat, you know, again, kind of the more acute it is, the closer it is to the fall itself, then ice is better. If it's more superficial stiffness and not local soreness or local sharp pain, then that's when heat can have an impact in terms of relaxing the muscles. But those things, they tend not to be curative. Along with rest, can help somebody recover from an injury.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Darlene in Ellison Bay. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I'm 71 and a nurse, and I'm on my feet a lot. And about 2 years ago, I had an episode of trochanter bursitis, is what the doctor told me. And I don't know what precipitated it, but he gave me a cortisone shot. It didn't do a whole lot, but after exercises and that, it finally calmed down. And then this past October, I heard it again. Doing yoga. I'm in a class, and it was the exercise where you put your legs straight up the wall. And, you know. Anyhow, it wasn't good. Though by the next day, I knew that I had problems. And I did get to a doctor, and he said I had a tight IT band. And I've been doing therapy. I did 14 sessions of physical therapy and exercises, and it's still very painful. And when I bend down, it's almost like something catches in my hip. It goes around to my groin, shoots down to my knee, and it's like it's a burning type of nerve.
Mm.
I'm just wondering, where do I go from here?
Yeah.
Well, has anyone looked at your hip, your hip joint?
I had two x-rays.
Okay.
And the joint looks good.
It's okay.
Not deteriorating.
Okay. Well, you know, when you talk about that sort of catching sensation and then pain into your groin, it makes me wonder about a labral tear in your hip, because that wouldn't show up on a radiograph. You need an MRI for that. And with the kind of mobility stuff you're doing in your yoga class and the fact that you...
I haven't gone back.
Right, right. But the things that you had been doing that require a lot of hip mobility, women are prone to certain kinds of... it's called femoral acetabular impingement syndrome. And, you know, typically iliotibial band is not going to refer to your groin. And typically after a cortisone injection and 14 sessions of PT and stretching and blah, 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 you should be better. So someone needs to be looking someplace else. And I guess the next place I would go would be looking for femoral acetabular impingement syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay, so this would require an MRI?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and Darlene, I would agree. And if that comes back negative, then, well, or at the same time, I'd have them look at your low back. The greater trochanter is out at the side of the hip. And that's also not an uncommon referral place for pain coming from the low back area. I think the hip is the most logical based on what you described, but You know, I would whoever you see, I would also have them screen your lumbar area and make sure.
I did have deterioration of the spine, but it wasn't severe. But
okay.
They did mention that when they did the X-rays.
Okay, and the clinical exam should help sort it out. Was it what Lori's talking about, or from the back? They should do movement assessment. They can do special tests to see where they can recreate your pain from. But I would agree with Lori. With all the things you had done, if it was truly greater trochanteric bursitis, you'd be better by now. And so looking for what's next on the list to rule out.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Debbie's wondering how to get back into exercising and exercise classes for people 60 and older. She wants to get going again, and she needs to do it properly and gently. Give her a 45-second answer to that.
Yes. Part of it depends upon where she lives, but if she's in the Madison area, the Madison MSC or Madison School Community Recreation offers classes for older people. I think going into a class is a good idea because an instructor will give you easier ways to do exercises and harder ways that are flexible. And have some guidance, and who will also hopefully keep her from overdoing it.
Very good tips. And there are a whole lot more tips coming, by the way. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Net. Then we'll be back with Bill and Lori. Stay with us. Taking a look at all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that can develop over spring gardening and other kind of spring activities. Larry Mueller here with my two guests for today, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. And they do a great job. Come by once a month to talk with us. Bill's a professor, associate professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center and the Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. And thanks again for coming, Bill. Appreciate it very much.
Glad to be here, as always.
And Lori, of course, Lori Tyne Brody, always great to have her with us, too. She's a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And it's fun. We've been doing this. How many years have we been doing this? We don't even want to talk about that.
Yeah.
We were in the old building when we started.
We were in the old building, the Whole Foods building.
Yep. That's right. We were in the Whole Foods building, the sports medicine and spine PT
class.
And so we moved in 95 or 96.
96, yeah.
Yep.
So it was before that?
Before that, yeah.
Well, wow.
Yeah, a lot of questions answered. You know, and the aches and pains, they just keep on coming, don't they?
Except we know more of them firsthand now. Yes, we do. Yeah, we've experienced more things. That's right.
Well, Lynette in Richfield has a question. I'm not sure it relates to her, but let's go there. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. The reason I'm calling is regarding a 15-year-old boy, and he's looking to become more physically active. He is not overweight at all,
okay.
But he's not overly thin either. He's been having trouble with one of his knees, which is kind of preventing him from going out and doing his little runs that he likes to do. And
is it running that he likes to do, or is it? It is
running that he does like to do it, but he also wants to get into some weightlifting and perhaps some football. So this is about the time that he's have to start training and stuff. But the knee that is bothering him is it's underneath the lower part of the kneecap, and icing has helped occasionally. He doesn't indicate that it's actually swollen, but he did say that it felt like a ball was rolling around in there.
Huh. So is it, you started to say it was underneath his kneecap or towards the bottom of his kneecap?
Towards the bottom, but more inside.
But more inside. Okay, because the first thing I thought was a condition called Sinding-Larsson-Johansson syndrome, which is a long term. It is the kneecap version of Osgood-Schlatter's, which more people have heard of, where you have traction on a growth center. In this case, rather than being on the shin bone, it's actually at the other end of that tendon, at the distal or the lower end of the kneecap. Still possible that that's it. And in the absence of an injury, you know, the feeling of something rolling around in there is, you know, that's a sign of a loose body, but it's, he's unlikely to have a loose body. The only sort of outlier that I would say is there is a condition that sometimes shows up in kids about this age. And that is it's called a discoid meniscus. And it usually happens on the outside meniscus. Your meniscus, or the cartilage between your two knee bones, your femur on the top and your tibia on the bottom, is kind of C or O shaped, and it's open in the middle. Some kids are born with a meniscus that's flatter, like a disc, and it doesn't show up until they start to become active. So that can produce a loose body where it would feel like there are things rolling around in his knee. So I would say at this point, because he wants to get active, he should go in and have this looked at to make sure that he gets on the right track. Because you want him to enjoy exercise. You want it to be a positive experience. You want him to become a lifelong exerciser. So if this is keeping him from doing that, take him in, have it looked at, have someone figure out what's going on, and get him on the right treatment regimen so that he can be successful in his exercise program.
What type of doctor would you suggest? An orthopedic?
I'd suggest a
specialist.
I'd say a sports specialist. If you have a pediatric sports specialist, we have those here in Madison. I'm not sure what you have available in Richfield, but we have pediatric sports medicine folks.
This kid is in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Well, there should be a pediatric sports medicine specialist in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I would suggest is getting him in there so that he can get on the right trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks, Lynette. Julia, in Mondovi. Hi.
Hello. Just wondering. My son's going to have surgery for the umbilical cord hernia. He's in his early 30s, and he's, you know, going to have kind of have the summer off from college. He's been going back to college, but he'll still be working. But he's going to have this done this week. And I know he's mentioned he wants to start an exercise program after he has this done because he's about 30 pounds overweight. He is active as far as he rides a bike and walks everywhere. Never really rides in a car anywhere, so he gets that kind of exercise. But I know he'd like to, because it's mostly, you know, probably belly fat, that type, you know, in that area, midsection area, and what would be the best. And I know dumbbells are maybe kind of a good way to do it at home, but is there somebody that you should look to, or websites, or somebody to design a program, or what, or go to PT afterwards and find out what he could or couldn't do?
Yeah, those are all really good questions. His surgeon will tell him when he can start exercising, and it's important that he follows that time frame so he doesn't develop another hernia. And so it may be a number of weeks before he can start doing some of the activities that you described. Once he gets the okay from the surgeon to go back to pretty much full activity, then seeing a physical therapist, and it would just be really needed for a visit or two to teach him. There's lots of ways to strengthen the core, and there are some ways that could get people into trouble, and working on different aspects of the core and hip musculature. And somebody can set up a home program for him very easily, and then how to progress that program. So that'd be my recommendation. But he'll be limited in the beginning until that surgical site heals and heals well, so there's no risk or minimal risk for re-herniation to occur.
Is there any exercise he should not ever do because he's had a hernia?
Well, as a general rule, we don't encourage people to do full sit-ups, you know, lying on their back, and, you know, especially if they hook their feet underneath something. The full sit-ups, it's getting at aspects of the core that aren't as helpful from a protective nature, and it puts a ton of pressure on the discs in the low lumbar spine.
I actually don't recommend that for anybody, do we?
No, we don't. We don't anymore. So that'd be, you know, not seeing your son or knowing your son from an exam standpoint. I can't remember the last time I told anybody to do full sit-ups, and I've stopped people from doing them who come in and tell me that's part of their program. There's lots of better ways and more effective ways to strengthen the core than doing a full sit-up.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. There are some neat machines in some of the places that are really kind of nice to use. And
yeah, there's lots of options. There's machines to use. We use foam rollers. We use exercise balls where you're combining strengthening with reflex reaction time and balance. Yeah. And, yeah, it's become much more sophisticated than it used to be.
Speaking of balance, Doris in Shawano County wondered if you could talk a little bit about poor balance of elderly, not due to dizziness, but just, you know, being able to stand on one leg, you know, that sort of thing, or just being a little unsteady. Well, Doris happens to be 90 years old, but she wants to have be getting out in the garden again. And
yeah, well, there's, you know, people sometimes stereotype elderly people as being unable to exercise or lift weights, but there's a large body of evidence supporting that the elderly can continue to build strength well into old age. So a strengthening program, I think, is key for balance. Most of the time, as you age, you lose what are called your type 2 muscle fibers, and those are the fibers for speed and power. And I think those are the ones that help with your reaction time, especially if you lose your balance, the quick movements. And so getting on a strengthening program, you know, getting someone to set you up on a strength program, you know, the younger you are, the better it is to start it. Even if you're, you know, 50, 60, 70, you can still start a strengthening program and be progressed to higher levels that include a little bit of speed and power. And it's safe to do as long as you're working with someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And if I could just add one quick thing.
Sure.
Lori described is the one thing that people can modify and progress at any age. And the other thing, as we age, and our vision changes, you know, vision is part of, you know, an important mechanism related to balance. Sometimes people just need a new prescription for their glasses, and that can help along with the other things.
There we go. Gary in Fitchburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a small hernia in my abdomen.
Okay.
And I haven't had it surgically repaired. I had another one surgically repaired a while back, but it was much worse. And I don't know if this is such a small one. I don't know if it's possible to avoid surgery in dealing with that, or if I have to, you know, go ahead and have it operated on.
Gary, when you say abdomen, is it around your belly button? Is it along the midline of your stomach? Where is the hernia?
It's actually, if you take the belly button and go down about, maybe 2 inches, and then off to the right, about another 3 inches.
Okay.
Kind of right there. If you were to take your hip bone and just kind of go right over to the left a few inches, it'd be right there.
Okay. All right. And you've seen somebody for this hernia, is that correct, and have just decided not to have surgery at this time?
No, I haven't seen anyone. I would see the same doctor. I had a hernia, you know, a while back, and that one was much worse. I had surgery on that, and it's fine now. But
right.
I don't know if there's a way to fix these on my own without having to go the surgical route.
Yeah, probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, they tend not to go away on their own. And, of course, you know, when you're bearing down or lifting heavy objects or things, it can get worse.
Yeah, that's it.
So the big thing is, you know, we need to be careful of anybody with a hernia, and including that area. If it starts becoming painful, you know, very exquisitely tender, that's when you want to see your physician right away. Sometimes contents from your GI system can get caught there or stuck there and cause major issues.
I'm thinking that I'm trying to get back into lifting weights again, and I'm afraid that's going to cause issues, so I should probably have it operated on and get dealt with.
Yeah, at least go in and see somebody and let them know what you would like to do and plan to do. You know, there are belts that people can wear. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's a bad thing. So, kind of going in would be a really good idea.
Good luck.
Fabulous. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And Nancy in South Dakota. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi. I actually am driving in Illinois with a headphone on, so I hope I don't lose you guys. But I have two issues. All my life I've had trouble with my muscles pulling my spine out. They'll get tight, and they won't release. If I take a muscle relaxant when I go to bed and I wake up in the morning and I'm fine, okay. But if I don't, if I'm not better, then I end up going to a chiropractor.
Okay.
The situation is this. The last time, or two times ago when I was the chiropractor and he pushed down on the middle of my back, I heard something pop. And it was up in my rib area, and I just went, oh, and it hurt a lot. Well, it got better over about probably a six-week period. And then I went back to him, and I told him about it. And so we did it again, and same thing all over again. So I'm wondering, how can I keep my muscles from pulling my spine out of place? I enjoy gardening, but and I do a variety of things. Like you say, I get up and move around, but I do tend to pull every weed, that last weed. But, you know, do I have a muscle problem or, you know, what can I do to keep my muscles from pulling my spine out of place in the first place?
Yeah, you're right. It's happening for a reason, and you know, this is where the examination would help guide you. If it was just a muscle problem, you know, then this probably would have gone away. You know, you wouldn't have all these repeated episodes. So it's probably something deeper in your spine, something more ligamentous. Sometimes people have an area that moves too much. We call it hypermobility. And muscles, they fatigue over time. They can't support your back. And then the episode begins. So somebody with your history, I would do a really good screening of hip flexibility, mobility, core strength, and probably going to need more than just one item, one aspect of rehab, you know, strengthening and stretching the appropriate areas. But there's some underlying reason why this keeps coming back, Nancy. And, you know, this is what the examination should point someone to in terms of...
Well, I'm at a loss as who to go to, though.
All right, so who all have you seen for this? You mentioned the chiropractor. Have you seen anybody else for this?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well then, and this would be the same advice I give. If you've been seeing a physical therapist all along and you were in the same predicament, it's time maybe for a second opinion. And you can do that through your chiropractor or you can do that on your own. But somebody with maybe a little different approach to really examine you from you know, top to bottom again and try to figure out why this is happening, and then they can map out a plan of what to do about it.
So maybe a physical therapist?
Yeah, a physical therapist would be, and again, it depends on how long you've had this, a spine specialist. So a physical therapist who's got expertise in spine, that would be the best place to go.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Al in Milwaukee, turning to you next. Hi, Al.
Yes, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a quick question on the bottom of my, not on the bottom, but on the side of the foot, right in the middle. There's a slight bump that really hurts all the time.
What is
that from?
okay, the side of your foot. You're going to have to orient me a little bit more on the outside or the inside?
The outside, I'm sorry.
Okay, and is it that bump that's partway down your foot, or is it closer back to your ankle?
Right about in the middle.
Right about in the middle. That is the base of your fifth metatarsal. And it shouldn't be sore all the time. Did you have an injury to it?
No. I have a bump like that on the other foot, too, in the same place, but that one doesn't hurt.
Okay. And so you are you on your feet a lot? Does your shoe rub?
Not really.
Okay. And how long has it been sore?
Oh, probably 4 or 5 months.
Okay. And does it hurt only when you walk or only to touch? Does it hurt at night when you're at rest?
It probably hurts when I walk more.
Okay. And then,
not when I'm resting, no.
Not when you're resting, no? Okay. Well, I'd go in and have that looked at, partly because that part of that bone is susceptible to stress fractures. And there's not a whole lot else that goes on there other than if it's very prominent, your shoe can rub it and make it sore and irritated at the joint, maybe have a little arthritis in the joint. Mm. But because that bone, if it does sustain a stress fracture, is or can be, there's a couple different kinds of stress fractures. It can be difficult to heal. We always want to make sure to rule that out first before we assume it's any other kind of a problem. So given that it's been going on that long, I would suggest going in, since it's been 4 or 5 months, a standard radiograph could tell you if you have a stress fracture there.
Radiograph?
An X-ray. Plain X-ray.
Oh, a X-ray. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. A plain X-ray can tell you if it's a stress fracture, and then you can go from there. But you should get it treated because you'll start to walk funny because it hurts, and then your knee hurts, then your hip hurts, then your back hurts.
And so, where do I go for something like that? Like
you could start with your primary care.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Al. Sally in Middleton, what's on your mind?
A mystery. I appreciate your advice on, well, I don't know what causes leg cramps, and evidently nobody seems to know. It's in bed, happens in bed at night or early morning, and you have to get out of bed and stand on it. What?
Okay.
Well, it can be a mystery, in part because it can be lots of things, many, many things, and it can be related to, you know, blood flow or lack of blood flow. It can be something in terms of kind of the biochemical. It can be, you know, kidney problems, dietary, you know, deficiencies can cause the muscle cramping. So it sounds like you've seen people for this, Sally.
No, I have not. I've heard on public radio that the Gradens talk about putting soap under the blanket, and that sounds crazy to me.
Yes. Well, sometimes it works, but what I would do is, how long has this been going on for you?
Not that long, and not too often. Maybe two times a week.
Okay. All right. And there's no pattern of your physical activity level that day? I mean, the day before, the evening, or?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, then what I'd recommend is, you know, I'd go in and see your physician about this and describe what you've described to us, and they'll know what tests to run to try to figure out what's causing. Again, it could be something simple, an easy dietary change can take care of for you, but it can be other things as well.
So and you need to...
Yeah, kind of figure out what is causing it. So it doesn't have to be a mystery. I understand where it's a mystery now, but the answer's out there somewhere. And I would start with your medical doctor first.
Mm-hmm. I have that in my left knee, you know, where I have a shattered meniscus, mm-hmm. essentially. But once in a while, I go to get out of bed in the morning, and I'll feel it starting to come on. If I actually continued to swing that leg, I know it would be really bad. sort of back off.
Yeah.
Wait a second or two, and then I take a little different approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, change the movement pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing how many people can accommodate to whatever their condition is by a little alteration in how they move, so on. And sometimes that takes care of it, but sometimes it creates a new problem.
Yeah.
Speaking of alterations, Bill's not going to be with us next month.
I will miss next month, unfortunately.
But
yes.
But sister.
Yes. My sister will be here so you can listen to a squabble.
I would sit between them if I were you.
Oh, that's a pretty dangerous spot.
Bill Boyzenout and Lori Tide Brody, our guests. And actually, Lori and Jill will be back in next month, and we'll do this all over again. Just to let you know, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk comes by with some advice about your pet's health. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.